I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. Last month, Governor Larry Hogan shelved the Baltimore region's Red Line, the long-planned $3 billion light rail project to connect western Baltimore County with the eastern side of the city. Since then, Lieutenant Governor Boyd Rutherford said rapid buses are the way to go. But there is no money for such a system, and the Hogan administration affirmed last week that Baltimore should expect no help from Annapolis for new public transportation projects. Still, Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake says officials are looking for a plan B and mentioned a rapid bus system as one possibility. In this hour, a look at fast bus systems across the U.S. and around the world. First, the news from NPR. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Midday. Dan Rodericks here. Thanks again for joining us and making Midday part of your day. In this hour, a look at bus rapid transit. What is it? Where is it being done? And would it someday down the line, someday in the future, be a viable alternative to the canceled Red Line project here in the Baltimore area? Governor Larry Hogan of Maryland announced last month that he was shelving Baltimore's Red Line, the $3 billion plan to construct a 14-mile light rail line from Woodlawn in western Baltimore County to Bayview in southeastern Baltimore City. According to Maryland Transit Administration projections, the Red Line's ridership would have grown to some 54,000 riders a day by the year 2035. Governor Hogan called the project too expensive and a boondoggle and killed it. And he rolled out $2 billion in spending for highway projects in rural and suburban areas across the state. Now, since then, his lieutenant governor, Boyd Rutherford, told the Baltimore Business Journal that rapid buses was the, quote, way to go for the city. Today, in this hour of the show, we're going to try to figure out what rapid buses are all about. And that term, rapid buses, we have to be careful about because it's one thing to say rapid buses or fast buses. It's another thing to say bus rapid transit with capital letters, BRT, because it means something specific. And we'll get into that in this hour of the show. Came up again yesterday, Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake saying that officials need to look for a plan B, an alternative, now that the Red Line has been scrapped. And one of the things she mentioned was a rapid bus system as a possibility. So in this hour, we'll take a look at fast bus systems across the U.S. and around the world. Paul Lewis is joining me here in the first hour of the show. Paul has a background in engineering, a master's degree in transportation from MIT. He studies the planning, politics, and economics of transit systems in his role as the director of policy and finance at the ENO Center for Transportation in Washington. It's a nonpartisan transportation think tank. The center works with government agencies and other groups to try to improve mobility, safety, sustainability of transit systems from light rail to aviation, all of it. Today, nice to have you on the show, Paul Lewis. Welcome to the show.
Glad to be here, Dan.
And joining us by phone, I want to say hello to Delegate Robert Flanagan, who served as Secretary of Transportation under former Maryland Governor Bob Ehrlich back when the planning for the Red Line first started. Robert Flanagan, now Delegate Flanagan, who represents Howard County in the General Assembly and has been a longtime advocate for bus systems here in Maryland. So, Robert Flanagan, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Paul, I'll start with you. You heard me go through that little semantical dance about, you know, someone can say, well, we need a rapid bus system or we need a bus rapid transit system. Bus rapid transit with capital letters actually means something specific.
Yeah, so bus rapid transit is technically supposed to be a bus system that is supposed to feel and operate a lot like a light rail system. It has dedicated lanes, signal priorities, off-board payment systems, and a few other features that help it get through the city much like a light rail would.
So it looks like a light rail station, maybe a smaller form of a light rail station. You buy a ticket before you get on the bus.
Exactly, right.
And then the buses have dedicated lanes.
Yeah, typically in the most congested part of the city, they'll have their dedicated lanes. They get through traffic a lot easier, just like a light rail system operating in a downtown area would as well.
We're going to talk about a couple of those systems with people who are familiar with them in Pittsburgh and Cleveland. I mentioned there's two cities. Where else do you see bus rapid transit in the United States?
So bus rapid transit hasn't really taken off in the United States in full-fledged form. A couple cities like Cleveland, Boston, Pittsburgh have done sections of their bus system in bus rapid transit. There's a few other cities that have done what some people like to call bus rapid transit light or rapid buses that implement some of the features of BRT into their bus network for all or some of a certain route.
For parts of routes.
Yes.
Now, what about overseas? I've been reading a lot about Johannesburg, South Africa, for instance, Quito, Ecuador, places where the BRT has been around for a while.
Yeah, BRT was really kind of pioneered in South America. Brazil and Colombia and Ecuador have some pretty amazing bus rapid transit systems that move in a huge volume of people pretty effectively through the city.
What do you think the advantages are over light rail? Is it cost? Is that number one?
So the number one advantage is you're going to save a lot on cost. Instead of having a rail system, which is pretty capital intensive, you can run it on streets by just partitioning off certain parts of the street. And in general, they tend to be a fraction of the cost of light rail. But there are other advantages as well. Buses can have a little bit more flexibility to go around an incident. For example, if there's a broken water main, they can go around that. Where
we have those in Baltimore.
Sure, I'm sure. Yeah, every city does. And that's a problem with rail, is that they're fixed on that guideway. And then also it's easier to extend or expand the system by just running the bus a little bit farther than you would normally. Whereas a rail, you do have to build out completely new infrastructure if you want to extend or expand the system.
When someone says rapid bus, they mean most often bus rapid transit. They mean this sort of official system with dedicated lanes and platforms and, you know, a place where you can buy a ticket before you get on the bus.
Yeah, typically. I mean, it really kind of depends on who's talking. And it does come down to semantics, and some people are very particular about the definitions of all these things. But in general, you know, these are the things that you can do to basically make the service better, make it faster, and make it easier to use for people in the region, both for locals and visitors.
Just one note, Boyd Rutherford, the lieutenant governor, said to the Baltimore Business Journal, rapid buses are the way to go. He may not have meant this, system that we're talking about here. I don't know what else he could mean besides rapid buses, fast buses. But anyway, there is no money for such a system right now. And the Hogan administration affirmed last week, the Secretary of Transportation presently, that Baltimore should expect no help for a new public transportation project anytime soon. Still, as I mentioned, Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake says officials are looking for a plan B. And one of the things she mentioned was rapid bus system. I want to go to Robert Flanagan, Delegate Flanagan, who was Secretary of Transportation under the administration of Robert Ehrlich when he was governor, and the planning for Red Line began. And Robert Flanagan, you were a supporter of bus rapid transit system all through those years, weren't you?
We were considering it a viable alternative. The state was looking at two jurisdictions that wanted new transit lines. Obviously, Montgomery County with the Purple Line and Baltimore City with the Red Line. And it was very seriously questioned whether the state could afford both of those projects at the same time.
What did you think was the advantage of, besides cost, the advantage of a bus rapid transit? And do you think it would work in Baltimore?
I absolutely think it could. It's much more flexible in how it's devised. So, for example, the Red Line was going to take a lane out of commuter traffic on Edmonston Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the transit advocates were telling me that was going to be a complete disaster for the overall transportation infrastructure for the city. With a bus rapid transit, you might not have to do that, but at the same time, find ways to get those people more quickly through the center part of the city with less impact on other with communities that are not in the inner city.
Hmm. Tell me, what was the argument against bus rapid transit for Baltimore over the Red Line during all those hearings that were held, public input? Was it because people had enough with buses already? They wanted something different in Baltimore?
Yeah, look, in some ways, buses are a dirty word, right? I mean, we sit in back of a bus and it aggravates us. People who have to ride buses, a lot of times they're stopping every block, and people are counting their dimes and quarters, and there's a long line to get on it. So their vision of buses is not positive. They haven't been to Boston to see the bus rapid transit there, or we went to Portland when they had a bus rapid transit. So it does have public relations problems. And also the other issue is developers. Developers would prefer a light rail, and they'd like to buy the land around the light rail stations and develop it, and they feel less secure with bus rapid transit. But I think that is also a problem that could be cured with some sort of long-term agreement with a development that you wanted to support.
We're going to be talking with a representative of the transit system in Cleveland a little bit later in this hour. And from my reading of the notes on this and stories, it seems like Cleveland did a pretty good job with economic development around bus rapid transit, along bus rapid transit. Paul, are you familiar with that?
Yeah, I don't want to speak too closely to it because
we'll get to it later in the hour.
But definitely,
that's the reputation it has there.
There's been billions of dollars of investment on their BRT line, new buildings, new residential, commercial buildings going up all the time, and a lot of it is tied to the investments they made with better transit.
Delegate Flanagan, I need to ask you this—a bit of a political question. Now, the red line has been killed, and we've seen where Governor Hogan's priorities are in terms of spending for transportation, and the message from his transportation secretary that the city should expect no new public transit project. So I'm glad we're talking about this today. I find it interesting. I hope our listeners find this interesting. But the reality is something like this cannot happen in Baltimore without a major investment, including an investment from the state of Maryland, right?
Absolutely true. And the fact that the mayor is saying, let's look at a plan B. The city still has a lot of political clout, and the city is still very important for everybody, Democrats, Republicans, the governor, legislature. We just need to develop a plan B and begin to think about what we want for the city for the next 5, 10, 15 years. There are short-term solutions, and then there's longer-term solutions.
And bus rapid transit, you think, should be one of the things that
I think bus rapid transit, but I also think improving the bus system. I mean, we put in quick bus routes, and that is part of the verbal confusion, I grant you,
mm-hmm.
but that stop along we started along the east-west route, didn't stop at every block. It only stopped at major stops. People really loved it, and since then there are two additional quick routes. So there are a lot of things that can be done to improve the bus system, and BRT is a major factor, but it is not the only thing that can be done.
Delegate Flanagan, thank you very much for being with us today and your input on this.
Thank you.
Yeah, Robert Flanagan, delegate, member of the Maryland House of Delegates, former transportation secretary under Robert Ehrlich. It's very interesting, Paul Lewis. I want to talk to you about Houston sometime during this hour because there's something amazing going on in Houston. Could you just tease that a little bit for our listeners? Give them a little bite of that.
Yeah, sure. We've been following different bus transit systems across the country, and Houston is one that's caught the news lately. They decided that their city has grown pretty dramatically in the past 30 years, obviously, since they put in their bus system. And they decided that it was time to just completely blow it up. So they erased the entire bus map and started from new routes, new kind of vision for mobility using their bus network. And they're rolling that out at the time, or right now, and they're expecting a 20% increase in ridership with no new additional buses or bus drivers.
We'll talk some more about that later in the hour. Does not include new bus rapid transit.
It's no,
just
that's
conventional
just,
buses.
That's right.
Just starting over again.
Yeah.
All right. Paul Lewis from the Enos Center for Transportation. Did I get that right? Yes. Enos Center for Transportation in Washington. And we're going to take a break here, Paul, so sit right there. Paul will be with us for the hour. When we get back, we're going to hear about bus rapid transit in Pittsburgh. and then later on in the hour, Cleveland. So please stay with us. If you have any comments or questions about this, please give us a ring here on the Midday Show, 410-662-8780. Send a question for Paul Lewis by email. That's midday@wypr.org. And welcome back to the show. Dan Rodericks here, joined in the studio by Paul Lewis, who thinks a lot about public transportation. He is the director of policy and finance at the ENO Center for Transportation, based in Washington. Before we go to our next guest, Paul, just a question about buses and bus rapid transit, getting people on buses, getting people to believe that a bus system can get them where they want to go, that it can be cool and sophisticated. You know, just getting people on buses. How do cities do in achieving that when they go to a system like this? Is it the word rapid? People believe that it's going to be better because it doesn't make as many stops? So what is it?
So typically when a city puts in a BRT system, it's kind of a complete redesign. It doesn't look or feel like a bus. If you look at a transit map, it's branded as a rail line. It'll be a big, thick line going through the city. The buses are usually a different color. They have features that you wouldn't normally see on your typical local bus. So it's a completely different feel, and it's much easier to use than what we know as our traditional bus systems.
I know you may not be intimate with our bus system, our MTA system here and circulator system in Baltimore, but I know you're familiar with it. A question by Twitter at Midday WYPR: how can you have a rapid bus system when the roads in Baltimore are deplorable and Larry Hogan refuses to invest in Baltimore roads? Well, I mean, that's the big question, isn't it? We're talking about this system in theory and looking at how it works in other cities, but we need a major investment in Baltimore to make this happen.
Yeah, so I think that it's not just investment in bus rapid transit when you're making an investment in bus rapid transit. You've got to think about the whole street network. And typically when there is a BRT or a rapid bus system put in, it's a complete sidewalk-to-sidewalk or sometimes building-to-building redesign of the street. So you're making it not just better for the buses, but better for all people trying to get through that corridor.
And you mentioned before the GPS system that triggers traffic signals for the rapid bus. That's part of it as well, right?
Yeah. We've seen that a lot, and not just for BRT, but for a lot of bus systems. It's becoming popular. New York, Los Angeles, for example, have GPS on their buses, on their rapid buses particularly, that communicate with the traffic signals so they can hold a green light a little bit longer to make sure that the bus makes it through, or sometimes they can make a green light come on quicker if the bus is coming down the road. So that giving priority, signal priority to buses is a great way to get speed and better service through the city.
Do BRT systems include park and ride?
They can, yes. It depends on what you're trying to serve and what route you have. But there can be park and ride in the suburban areas that come into a core that has more dedicated lanes and more rapid features.
410-662-8780 is our phone number here for the Midday Show live talk. If you have a question for our guest, Paul Lewis, a transit expert from the D.C.-based ENO Center for Transportation. Joining us now by phone, we welcome Bob Hurley. Bob Hurley is Director of Economic Development for Allegheny County in Pennsylvania and the current chair of the Port Authority Board of Allegheny County, which provides public transportation through Pittsburgh and the county. The city of Pittsburgh has three bus rapid transit systems, BRT systems: the South Busway, opened in 1977, the East Busway, opened in 1983, and the West Busway, which opened in the year 2000. Bob Hurley, welcome to the Midday Show in Baltimore. Thank you for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So those busway systems I just mentioned, Bob, that's about 16 miles total, is that right?
Yeah, roughly. We've got our three busways run from approximately 4.3 miles on our shortest route to about 9 miles on our longest route.
And are they what bus rapid transit systems look like? Do they represent that with dedicated lanes and small stations where people buy tickets?
Well, they're a combination of them. They're not in the sense of what you would see in a new BRT system being built right now. We originally built our routes along old rail corridors. back in the 70s before people were really thinking about the word bus rapid transit. They're dedicated areas with stops. As the previous guest was mentioning, there's no issue with signaling on them because there are free-flowing zones without other transit. But by and large, they're our most efficient routes, they're our most cost-effective routes, and they carry our best number of passengers.
And what does ridership look like? Can you cite a recent year, like last year, the year before?
Well, we carry approximately 63 million, 64 million riders a year right now on our system. The system's made up of those three guided ways that you mentioned. We also have, 20 or 30 miles of light rail, and we also have approximately 700 buses on the street, as well as two inclined planes.
Hmm. And you heard me ask Paul Lewis about park and ride. Does park and ride occur along the route?
Yeah, absolutely. Throughout our system, we have 54 parking locations. We provide approximately 14,000 parking spaces at those locations.
And Bob, I'm curious about who's using, that's a lot of people, that's pretty impressive ridership. Bus rapid transit popular with younger people than older people? Who uses it?
You know, the younger folks we are finding are more inclined to use it, but I would tell you our ridership is down from its heyday. When we had unlimited buses and unlimited routes, we carried almost 110 million people a year. Through decreases in funding over the years and a number of other issues, we've had to cut our service considerably, dropping it sometimes as much as 27% in a scheduled year through cuts. So, 15%. We were looking at a 27% cut. So our younger people are traditionally riding it, but we're also finding those that are in need of a vehicle, people who may not be of the greatest needs, that can't afford a car, as well as our elderly to get shopping and to doctor's appointments, et cetera.
So you attribute that decline to just the limited, the contraction of the system, or what?
Primarily contraction and increased cost. We charge $2.50 for a single way ride in our downtown corridor. That is one of the largest, highest in the nation. And every time we have had to increase our fare, our ridership has fallen.
Wow. So you must be in the phase of just maintaining what you have. Are there any plans for expansion?
We do have plans to expand. We were fortunate 2 years ago, our state legislature recognized we were in the process, as well as our counterpart in Eastern PA, SEPTA, that runs the Philadelphia system. We were both looking at massive cuts again because state funding was year to year. They enacted a 10-year plan that allowed us to maintain our current ridership, not add anything new, but maintain our current ridership. What that has done is allow us to look for efficiencies, both in the GPS as well as on-time demand of riders, and looking at ways where we can actually cut costs and add service through savings rather than every year just begging for money to maintain it on a yearly basis.
Hmm. So, Bob, boy, it sounds like it was very popular, and boy, the contraction is disappointing.
It's extremely disappointing. In downtown Pittsburgh, we bring in roughly half of the working population uses public transit to get into our city every day. And we think it would even be higher if we had our old routes back in place. But, you know, cost is an issue, and we have to deal with it. We are in the process of looking to build another BRT line that would connect our downtown corridor with what is known as Oakland. Oakland is where our universities and our medical communities are. That one will be more along the lines of what you think about now with vehicles that look more like a subway, side entrance and exits from them, and that will be a route which will deal with the signalization of being on the downtown and Oakland streets rather than on a dedicated route.
Hmm. Paul Lewis, do you have a comment about what you just heard from Bob Hurley?
Yeah, I would just say that, you know, the declines in ridership that Pittsburgh has been experiencing is pretty common, actually, in U.S., whether it's Pittsburgh or Baltimore, you know, population declines in urban cores and budget cuts have reduced service. So that's not to say that, you know, Pittsburgh is alone in this, but they're speaking to his comments on the BRT system. It sounds like they've got a lot of promise, and those are definitely ways that people use to get around the city.
So you see contraction having to do with all the financial issues related to decline in population in urban corridors.
Yeah, and I would, you know, and Bob, you might want to comment on this, but I would say that they've probably been able to maintain a lot of their ridership despite this because they have really good service on their bus lines.
Bob?
Yeah, I do. I would concur. We have a fantastic workforce. We've got approximately 2,700 employees that are very dedicated. They go out of their way to make it a customer-friendly experience, and that's one of the things that we're learning. You know, you can provide a product. If it's not a product that someone enjoys, they're probably not going to come back to it. We really do see the younger folks wanting better systems and better transportation. They are moving into our urban corridor, where our urban corridor generally did not have housing in the past. We are seeing an influx of younger folks to our urban corridor, as well as empty nesters, and they don't want that car, or at least they don't want that second car. They're really demanding better public transportation.
So I want to say, if you build it, they will come, because it sounds like wishful thinking. But, I mean, public investment is needed for public transportation systems, right? So wouldn't it make a city more appealing, a neighborhood more appealing, if the system was in place? I mean, it's a question of which comes first, Bob, right? The population or the system?
Well, interestingly enough, we, from the local government, we match 15% of every dollar the Fed or the state brings to our system. That's the highest in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. We actually, I think it was 2008, we put in place a drink tax on poured beverages. That is a 1% cost on our taxing here. That actually allows us to match that money. And we also have some additional monies that are available to match our capital projects on the Port Authority. So we've been fortunate. Our leaders have seen that some of these solutions have to start locally. You cannot depend on the federal government for everything as well as the state. We'd rather look at them as partners rather than us depending on them to provide everything.
Bob, thanks for your time today.
Sure. Thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
Same here. Bob Hurley, Director of Economic Development in Allegheny County, Pennsylvania, and currently chairs the Port Authority's Board of Allegheny County, speaking to us about the Pittsburgh area's bus rapid transit system. Now we're going to switch to Cleveland. And I understand, Paul Lewis, you grew up in Cleveland, is that right?
Yeah, I grew up in the Cleveland area, just south of the city.
Joe Calabrese is with us now by phone, CEO and General Manager of the Greater Cleveland Regional Transit Authority. He oversees day-to-day operations of the multimodal transit system in Ohio, one of the largest in the nation, and as we mentioned, one that gets props for leading to economic development along its route. Joe, thank you very much for joining us on the Midday Show here at WYPR.
Yeah, Dan, you're welcome. And Paul, good to talk to you again.
So, Joe, tell us about the system in Cleveland. Just describe it generally for us, please, the BRT.
Sure, I will certainly. We have an older system as well as Pittsburgh. We have a rail system, light rail, dates back to 1914. Actually, our heavy rail or subway type system back to 1950s. But Euclid Avenue has always been the main street of Cleveland, and the discussion happened. It was happening over many, many years. What do we do with Euclid Avenue? Primarily, to improve transportation, but even more importantly, to improve economic development and reinvestment in the core of an older city. So through many years of study, the determination was reached in about 2002 to put bus rapid transit on Euclid Avenue, connecting the two major employment centers in the region. You know, we studied light rail, we studied BRT, and without a doubt, BRT we felt was the best solution for this corridor. We wanted to serve about 30,000 people a day, wanted to do something where economic development would follow, wanted to do something that we could afford. We ended up building a bus rapid transit system, really the first comprehensive BRT system in the U.S. We did get some federal help to do that. It was the first federal grant for a non-rail type system. Spent about $168.4 million, and that project has generated over $6 billion in economic development. We took our best bus route, our highest ridership bus route, converted that to a bus rapid transit corridor, and saw a 48% increase in ridership the first year. So it's just really been phenomenal. It's been well recognized. The return on investment of that project has been $114 of investment for every $1 in project cost. So a great project for us in Cleveland. It has really opened up a lot of new areas for development. And it's something we're really glad we did.
Joe, what does that look like when you say $6.3 billion in economic development? What are we talking about? New retail, new office buildings, new
we're
residential?
We're talking about a combination. I think there's a lot of major investments. The corridor is marked with two major hospitals, both of which did expansions, several museums, Cleveland Museum of Art, which is a very famous international museum, did a big expansion. But also, in addition to those big expansions, just a tremendous amount of residential. Old office buildings that were not in occupancy have been converted to downtown residences. You talked about the millennials. Right now there are 21 buildings in downtown Cleveland with waiting lists. There are over 2,000 individuals waiting to move downtown. And again, many of those are millennials. Many of those are senior citizens, but they want to move to a place where having an automobile is not mandatory, but it's an option.
I'm not sure you referred to it as the health line. Did you use the term health line?
I did use the term the health line.
I'm sorry, I missed that because that's what
Well, it is called the health line. It was going to be called, to go back to some of Paul's comments, it was going to be called the silver line. Again, we wanted to build the most rail-like BRT system we could. We wanted to give it even a rail-like name. We currently have the red line, the blue line, and the green line rail systems in Cleveland, but the name became the health line because we sold the naming rights to it to the two major hospitals that I mentioned. I think in some of your comments you talked about how do you attract the non-traditional transit riders to transit or to BRT, and I think it's all about the image. You'll see around the country, people of a higher demographic, people maybe that wear suits, are much more drawn to modes with a higher image like rail. So we tried to develop this BRT system with that rail-like image. We did that to the point where we're able to sell the naming rights to that, to two major institutions. To our knowledge, the first naming rights deal for a public transit mode in the country, 25-year naming rights contract. We opened up our second BRT corridor just last December. We also sold the naming rights to that, a 28-year contract with Cleveland State University. That's now called the Cleveland State Line. And again, for example, we just celebrated our six-month anniversary for that, and ridership was up over 20% in the first 6 months. So again, people are responding. People at all economic and educational levels are responding very positively to something that is perceived as more first class. We market it as faster, safer, and more first class. We deliver a more first class product, and the results in terms of ridership and support from the public and developers have been just outstanding.
A couple of logistical questions about the health line. Does it operate all day?
The health line operates 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Again, total reconstruction, as Paul mentioned, new roads, new sidewalks, new signal lights, new traffic lights, 1,500 trees, burying all the overhead cable. So much more than a public transit project, really a transformation of the corridor, where people want to live, where developers want to invest, and that's where the ridership comes from.
Could you describe what the bus looks like on that route? What a rapid transit vehicle actually looks like?
First of all, we don't call them buses.
I've noticed that, yeah.
Because in the U.S., unfortunately, bus is a four-letter word. We call them rapid transit vehicles. We actually worked with a company to specially design a vehicle that looked more like a train. As trains have doors on both sides, our vehicles have doors on both sides. They pull up to stations with precision docking, level boarding, so you're walking on and off as if you're walking on and off of a subway car. There's off-board fare collection, again, so when the vehicle stops to board its passengers, it stops for a shorter duration. Thereby, you get that speed or that rapidness you talked about. It's not necessarily how fast it goes. It's the duration, the shorter durations of the stops. But the vehicles are in their own lane. They have the signal prioritization system. Actually, the speed in our lane, our exclusive lane, is 35 miles per hour versus the speed of the adjacent general use lane, which is 25 miles per hour. We reduced the travel time from 40 minutes to 28. We reduced the number of stops from 108 bus stops to 36 stations. So we did a lot of things to get people from point A to point B quicker and in a more first-class way.
And, Joe, can you talk about the population along that route? Has the route encourage? It sounds like it did because of what you said about the demand for residences along there. What can you say about population?
Well, it did certainly encourage more people living downtown, more people living along the corridors. You have developers who have developed land in areas that have not been developed for years. Property values in Midtown Cleveland, this is between the two ends of the line of this quarter, have increased fourfold since we opened in 2008. So it really has helped that economic development picture. And yes, the people who always live there are there. Nobody has been forced to move out, but the new buildings, the new people moving in are primarily millennials, primarily business people. We see developers build office complexes there, and people moving into those offices are people who want to take the Health Line, either downtown in the westerly direction or out to University Circle, which is the other end of the line in the easterly direction.
How many years are we talking about here? I want to go back over this history with you just a bit. So when did all this come into place? When did
we opened the Health Line? We got the full funding grant agreement from the federal government in 2004.
Okay.
We were finalized design. We opened in 2008.
All right. So a question then: Did people say, "Well, it'll never work here. The streets are already too tight. They're too congested. How can you make room for a dedicated lane for a fast bus?" Did you hear that?
Yes, by some people. Our position was, along with the position of the city of Cleveland, that if we're going to do this, we're going to do it right. And you can't do this right unless you have that exclusive lane. If this was light rail going up and down Euclid Avenue, you certainly would have to dedicate that exclusive lane to the train. So, again, we view this as no different than a train. This is a train on rubber tires. So we use the same philosophy. There were some people who said you should do light rail or nothing. And, again, I'm certainly not against light rail, but it was economically unfeasible to do that. And if we took their position, we would have done nothing, which certainly would not have been the right decision. And, the few naysayers there were must have left town because I haven't heard from them in about 6 years.
Okay. Joe, before I let you go, just Paul Lewis, I wonder if you had a comment about all you've heard here from Joe Calabrese in Cleveland.
Yeah, I just like to echo a lot of Joe's comments. As somebody who goes back to visit friends and family back in the area, if I'm downtown, that's a great way to get around, and it's definitely something that's very usable, very easy to get around, and it's in an area that's booming right now.
And you've noticed this growth that he's talked about along the route.
Absolutely, yeah. I remember going back there 10 years ago, and it was a completely different city.
We're talking about the rapid transit system in bus rapid transit system, BRT, in Cleveland. They don't call it that. It's called the Health Line because it's actually, as Joe was saying, the first transit system in the nation to sell naming rights, a sponsorship off.
We refer to BRT as better rapid transit.
Better. Right. Well, thanks for spending some time with us today, Joe.
You're very welcome.
Yep. Nice to have you on the show. Joe Calabrese, Chief Executive Officer and General Manager of the Greater Cleveland Regional Transit Authority. Before we go to our next break, Edward Cohen has been holding, he wanted to say something. Edward Cohen, from the Citizens Advisory Committee for the Red Line, the Red Line Council reviewed this idea of a bus rapid transit in Baltimore. That's why we had Robert Flanagan on the show earlier. So, Mr. Cohen, thank you for calling.
Thank you for putting me on. There are several things I want to point out. Number one, what system works in any given location depends upon the kind of space you have available and the land use in that area. When we looked at BRT, there were six BRT alternatives on the Red Line. There were four light rail alternatives. There was less than 1% support from the general public at the public hearings for all six of them combined. So the public in Baltimore was not in favor of it, and there were a number of reasons why. Baltimore is more spatially constrained than Houston or Cleveland or Cincinnati is. We have greater congestion, narrower roadways, shorter blocks, narrower sidewalks. Our buildings aren't set back, and so it's very difficult. We do not have railroad rights of way that come into our downtown area that are abandoned that we can tap into. And so when we were looking at BRT, we looked at surface BRT, and all that seemed to do was add congestion in an already over-congested downtown, and there really wasn't any place to divert that traffic. And the other alternatives, most of the BRT alternatives, involved building a tunnel over 2 miles long under downtown. So there was still a major infrastructure investment in that. That's just about twice as much tunnel as it would take to extend our subway on the east side. And that would only require one underground station. The red line that came out required five. So you have to look at your individual city and see what works in your city. I can tell you that the biggest problem that we have right now is an insufficiency of vehicles. We have 729 buses in our fleet, and 30 years ago we had 1,300. And that's the biggest reason that our service is so inadequate. You simply can't stuff the number of people that we have onto the number of vehicles that we have.
Mr. Cohen, thank you very much for your comments. If others would like to join in our conversation, we'll take a quick break and come back and take some more calls. 410-662-8780. A couple of quick emails. Sean says, Baltimore needs a proper rail system to survive and grow. We should have built our subway system with D.C. when we had the chance. Yeah, correct. Why is elevated rail or monorail never considered? It is above the surface. You don't have to tunnel. The biggest disruption comes from building the support foundations. What do you think of that, Paul Lewis, from the Eno Center for Transportation?
Yeah, elevated rail is certainly an interesting idea. It does. There has not been a whole lot of elevated rail built in this country in a long time, whether it's monorail or any other kind of L system. And, you know, there's a reason. It is more expensive than people think. It is a disruptive in that it takes away some of the skyline, particularly for people walking on the street. And it's, you know, it's not it's as inflexible as any other rail system.
Here's a question for you, Paul, from Mike. He says, is your organization, Eno Center, in a position to help address the mindset issues partially mentioned by Delegate Flanagan? In the U.S. and in the Baltimore area, people want to have their own car. Riding with others and on the bus represents negative concepts for many Americans.
Yeah, I think, you know, our organization looks at all kinds of different transportation problems. Bus networks are certainly one of the areas that we have a lot of interest. We see most transit networks, particularly with buses in this country, for a long time have been viewed as social services before they're viewed as a transportation service. And I think in order to change perception, in order to make it more useful to everybody in the city, it needs to be more viewed as a transportation network that responds to how people want and need to get around the city today.
Let's take another call here. Brian in Baltimore. Welcome to the Midday Show. Go right ahead, Brian.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I've always thought that the BRT program would be a great idea in the right place, but I've never felt that it would suit Baltimore because unless you keep the transit vehicles off of the street grid, you lose the rapid side of it. So I don't know how this looks downtown. I'd love to know a little bit more about that. I thought when Lieutenant Governor suggested the BRT as being an alternative for the city, it was a little like George Bush saying, let's go to Mars. You know, it's unfunded and kind of an empty statement from an empty suit.
Well, it turned out to be an empty statement because the very next week, the Secretary of Transportation said there'd be no new funding for public transportation in Baltimore. What about that? You know, I don't know if you've looked at Baltimore streets, Paul. I don't know. I guess other folks did. They spent more than 10 years studying the red line and looked at that alternative and decided the red line was the way to go.
Yeah, so I guess on that, one of the disadvantages of buses, and this is very true, is that it doesn't work very well in a tunnel. Most of the time when you have a rail system, if you look at any subway system, they're always a rail system because you're operating in a very narrow space at very high speeds, and a driver on a bus really can't do that very effectively. But BRT systems do kind of have to be in a downtown street grid if they're going to get through. That said, I think that careful planning in a lot of other cities have made it so that it doesn't disrupt the automobile flow as much. You may have to take away a lane of traffic here or there on a certain corridor, but in other areas, you can divert traffic and find different parts of the grid to absorb some of that extra capacity.
The governor of Maryland, transportation secretary, both described the fatal flaw in the Red Line as being the tunnel. But people who supported that said, well, you need a tunnel in order to keep the speed up of the system. Otherwise, it's going through downtown traffic. It doesn't make any sense to keep it all above ground.
All right. Look, you know, I think the Red Line was a great project. The problem is that we live in a society and an economic situation where we have very constrained resources. And if we want a tunnel through downtown, we're going to have to pay for it. And that money has to come from somewhere. And, you know, right now it's not in the Maryland budget. It's not in the federal budget. And so either, you know, invest in some kind of upgrade to a bus system or not have anything at all.
Okay. How about a major upgrade to a bus system? Let's spend the last few minutes here talking about this. All right, Paul? So looking at the future in Baltimore, you know, there's no immediate money anywhere. Red Line is gone. This bus rapid transit sounds like a great idea, but you need money for it. Let's talk about Houston again. Because here in Baltimore, what's relevant to Baltimore looking at the immediate future would be a major upgrade of the system you have now. I would think that would be the first thing to think about, right? And in Houston, they blew up their system and started over again. They even had a project called the System Reimagining Plan.
Yeah, so a lot of cities, now that they're in this same kind of situation as Baltimore, they want to invest in their transit system. They don't have the money to do it. They're trying to take some innovative approaches. And Houston was one example that we highlighted in a recent article about their reimagining system. And basically, they said, look, we have so many buses, we have so many drivers, and the advantage of a bus network is that it's somewhat flexible. So let's start over. And so they erased the map, and they drew lines, you know, bus lines, different varying frequencies, better connections to get people from where they're living now to where they're working now, because the old bus system was designed for 30, 40, 50 years ago. They are in the process of rolling that system out. We're watching it very closely. But using the same amount of drivers, the same amount of buses, they're expecting a 20% system-wide increase in ridership.
So it was a matter of looking at where the jobs are today, where the demand is, and was that, I mean, that's the main dynamic in that?
Yeah, I mean, it's really kind of taking a completely brand-new, fresh look at, okay, where do you want to, and not just public transit, but transportation in general, and seeing how do people move around the system. And where do people want to go, and what's useful and what's not useful? And by doing that, they were able to target lines that facilitated transfers and increased frequencies to where people are actually traveling today.
You know, I mean, it sounds great. I can imagine the public hearings on that, right? What are you going to do to my number three line? What are you going to do to my number 64 line, right?
Yeah, it's
that's all part of it.
It's very hard to take something away, and some people did lose their bus stop. It's hard to take something away from somebody that has it now and for a benefit of somebody who doesn't know that they're going to benefit at some point in the future. So the political challenges with that is the real cost. So although it was technically, you know, a very, very, very low-cost way of making a huge improvement in transit, it's hard to do politically because you have to have somebody who's going to lead on an issue and say, look, we're going to do this for the better of the city.
Who did that? The mayor? Who did it?
It was a combination
of... Who were the stakeholders, Paul? There's a term I said I wasn't going to use anymore. But, I mean, who crusaded with this? Who campaigned for it?
Yeah, so I'm not exactly sure the inner working politics of everything that went on there. But from what I was reading about it, it's been a pretty concerted effort from local government and from the transit agency to say, look, we need to do something.
Thank you very much for being here today, Paul. Paul Lewis from the Eno Center for Transportation. And actually, he's director of policy and finance for the Eno Center for Transportation, which I'm just learning about, this think tank in Washington. And Paul has an article about what he was just discussing, Houston and their shiny new bus network. Thank you for being here today, Paul.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Today's lunch, Paul, today's lunch is for you, our midday guests and some of our staff members. Today's lunch is from Eddie's of Roland Park, offering gourmet sandwiches, soup, salads, and desserts at its two stores, one on Roland Avenue, the other on North Charles Street. Personal shopping, catering, and gift baskets are available at eddiesofrolandpark.com. Thanks again, Paul. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in to this first hour of Midday. Please stay tuned for the news from NPR and then the second hour of our show.